Welcome to another edition of Mormon Land. I'm managing editor Dave Noyce, and I oversee our faith coverage. I'm joined again by senior religion reporter Peggy Fletcher Stack. Hello, Peggy.
Hi, Dave.
Well, Rabbi Sam Spector of Congregation Kol Ami in Salt Lake City has been in Utah a little more than 2 years, but has already built strong relationships with members and leaders in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Just last week, the young rabbi was on hand to oversee a group of LDS volunteers from Utah County who spent 5 days working alongside members of Kol Ami to xeriscape the synagogue's six-acre plot. He also joined a Jewish group that meets regularly with academics from LDS Church-owned Brigham Young University. Rabbi Spector is here today via Zoom to talk about his impressions of the Beehive State, his relationship with Latter-day Saints, and his ongoing conversations about Mormon and Jewish theology and practice. Rabbi Spector, welcome.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
We're so glad to have you with us. So for starters, Rabbi, tell us, give us a brief bio of yourself, where you're born, where you grew up and educated, and how you came to be a rabbi.
Yeah, no problem. So I grew up in Seattle, Washington, and it was grew up in Jewish community there. Then I was wanting to dry out a little bit from the rain, so I went to UC San Diego, University of California, San Diego, where I graduated with a major in Judaic studies. And I was so thrilled to get accepted to rabbinical school because I didn't know what else I would do with a Judaic studies major. And I went to Hebrew Union College, Jewish Institute of Religion, which is the flagship seminary for the Reform movement of Judaism. Spent 1 year of seminary in Jerusalem and then 4 years of seminary in Los Angeles on the Los Angeles campus of HUC. And after I was ordained, I was an assistant rabbi at a large 800 family synagogue in Los Angeles. And before I came out here, and that's my life in a nutshell.
So what about family?
I'm a newlywed. I was married in this past November to a nice Jewish girl from Idaho, of all places. We met in LA. Her name's Jill. She works in hotel management. And this time we have two dogs, Walter, a chocolate lab, and Nezik, a Brittany Spaniel, both 2 years old and keep us very active and busy.
That's cool. And everyone's been healthy and happy?
Thank God that everybody's been healthy and happy during weird time.
How did you end up coming to Utah? And what did you know about Utah before you came?
I'd been to Utah once before with my dad about 10 years ago. We came out here for a father-son trip and kind of went national park hopping, and we spent a day in Salt Lake City. And I just remember thinking it was so beautiful here and that people were very friendly. And as I was considering in Los Angeles what steps I wanted to go in my career, really in Los Angeles, I saw myself being one of two types of rabbis. Either the head rabbi of a massive 3,000 family mega synagogue, who's often in the paper and meeting the mayor and is on TV every day, not really knowing your congregants though too well, except for the high level donors. Or I saw myself being like some of my friends who were rabbis who had 300 family synagogues where they were never going to be on TV or meeting the mayor or having that major amplified voice in the community, but they got to have very meaningful relationships with every one of their congregants. And as I was considering career paths, I overheard somebody mention Rabbi Fink, the rabbi up in Boise, and a colleague of mine said, "Oh, why would you want to be a rabbi in Boise? Are there Jews in Boise?" And somebody else said, "Actually, Rabbi Fink has the best job in the world. He has been in that town for 20 years. It's beautiful. It's affordable. But he also knows every single one of his congregants. And at the same time, being the largest synagogue in Idaho, he meets with the governor regularly. He's often in the newspaper, on the news, and he gets to have a voice to create change in his community." And I went, "I want to be like Rabbi Fink." And I saw that Salt Lake City was hiring. And so that's kind of what drew me out here. This is a wonderful community. It's fast growing also. As you know, people are moving to Utah. And also one of the big appeals for me in coming here was the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, of all things. In Los Angeles, everything kind of revolved around the entertainment industry. And here, religion is the focus, which was very appealing to me. And I often say that the only rabbi in the world whose job really compares to mine is the rabbi in Rome, because who else is a rabbi in the headquarters of a major world religion? It's a very unique and exciting experience.
Well, what did you know, Rabbi, about LDS Church, like teachings, practices, history before you came?
Very little. I'm embarrassed to say that. Probably I learned most from watching South Park and things like that. I went in school in Seattle. There was one student in our entire school who was a Latter-day Saint. And this poor kid got picked on mercilessly. Nobody really knew anything about his faith, but asked him how many moms he had, things like that. And this poor kid got picked on so mercilessly, but he was always so nice, and I'm still proud of who he was, and I admired that a lot. And I'd had some interactions in college with Latter-day Saints around my Israel group on campus, and those had always been very positive. And I lived right across the street from the San Diego Temple, and I always wanted to go inside. It was so incredible, so beautiful. And one of my a student at my university said, "Well, I can get you in there." I said, "Really? How can you do that?" He said, "It's easy. Just convert to Mormonism, and we'll get you right in." And so, other than that, I really didn't know any Latter-day Saints or know too many. And so, I came here to Utah, and my next door neighbor, I listened to some books on tape while I was driving out here from California, and I learned a lot through those. My next door neighbors were very, very devout Latter-day Saint family. And my first week here, I was to introduce me to the leadership. A lunch was arranged with me and somebody in church leadership. So I had lunch with this very nice man and got to know him. He was a lovely person. And I see my next door neighbors the next day, and I tell him, "I met somebody from who works at your church." And they said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah, maybe you know him. His name's Jeff." And they went, "Jeff, I don't know if I know Jeff." And I said, "Holland, Jeff Holland. Do you know Jeff Holland?" And their eyes just like, you know, almost fell out of their, came out of their eye sockets. They said, "Well, I know who he is. I've never met him." I was like, "Oh, you should meet him. He's a great guy." And they said, "You don't understand. You don't get to meet him like that." So I got, many Christians would say, baptized by fire when I came here, and got to know people pretty quickly, and I learned a lot on the fly.
Well, have you had any really big surprises, the things that surprised you when you came, that from what you, an impression you had to this is how it really is or appears to be?
About the church?
The church or just Utah in general, even?
Yeah, so I mean, what's been surprising to me is just, again, how nice everybody is here, how friendly people are, how they really look out for each other. This is evident with all the things that the church does for us. Zions Bank heard that we needed, that our roof was leaking, and they gave, I was trying to raise an exorbitant amount of money to get a new roof to try and keep our synagogue from falling in on itself. And they asked me, the CEO asked me, "How much is that?" I told him what it would cost. And he said, "Oh, we'll give you a new roof." And I went, "What?" And he said, I was like, "You'll give us a loan for that?" He goes, no, "We'll give you a gift for that. We help each other out, and we love the things you're doing here. And that's part of being a community." And that's been the beauty of Utah for me. Sometimes coming from LA, I think I'm a bit more cutthroat. And so it can be, a little bit of a challenge in Los Angeles. If you weren't the very best at something, you'd be out of a job, and there'd be 10 more qualified people than you the next day to apply for your job. And here our unemployment numbers are so low and such, at least before the pandemic they were. And I've had to grow a little in my own patience, I guess. But I've been shocked at just how nice everybody is here. And people here really do seem to want to help.
So who were your first Latter-day Saint friends? Were your neighbors? Or or who? Oh, someone, and what did you learn
and
from
some
them?
Guy named Jeff, yeah. Yeah.
Some guy named Jeff, yeah, yeah. Exactly. meet with Governor Herbert and get to know his staff really well, and many of them have become personal friends of mine. Just the outreach from the churches, people within the church has been really amazing. And I think that without speaking for them, I've heard from many Latter-day Saints that they feel a kinship and relationship with Jewish people and a shared narrative. And so I think a lot of people have gone out of their way to reach out to me. So you mentioned in your introduction to me this academic dialogue group that I've become a part of with BYU professors and Jewish academics. And it so happens that the Jewish academics are based in Los Angeles. And once a year, this group, entire group meets either in Provo or Los Angeles. And after I had accepted the job, the position at Cola, I still had a few months where I was under contract living in Los Angeles. And it just so happened that this group came out to Los Angeles for their annual session. And they invited me to go to the campus of Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles and to take part for a few days in that dialogue. And so there were about, I don't know, 8 Latter-day Saints that came out for that. And I never met so many Latter-day Saints. I didn't, like I said, I didn't really know what it was, what their faith was before coming to Utah. Growing up in Seattle, there actually was a ward in my neighborhood. I didn't know anybody who was a part of it, but when I drove past it, I grew up in a very Christian neighborhood. I just saw Church of Jesus Christ, and I figured, oh, it's another Christian church, and I didn't really know how it differentiated from other Christian denominations.
So tell us about this new book that that has been created by this dialogue, Understanding Covenants and Community, Jews and Latter-day Saints in Dialogue. Were you involved in that, or what do you think about it?
I guess with this book, I was indirectly involved in it. I'm not one of the contributors to it. I always say that I basically have the great fortune of being a part of this group because I'm the Salt Lake City rabbi guy, and so... I'm their local Jewish contact. But I often say I'm the unacademic voice in the group. So it's put together, though, by the other people. The articles are written by the academics in the group, many of whom were my professors in rabbinical school and who are all incredibly bright people. I guess my little part of it was that in our dialogue group, we discuss, we'll have Latter-day Saints perhaps presenting on women in Mormonism. And then a Jewish academic who has a focus on feminism and Judaism will give a response on women in Judaism. And we will then all open it up for discussion and challenge each other. And so I've gotten to be a part of those, but I didn't write any of the articles, but I'm very excited to read the book that was really produced from the discussions we had. And a huge part of this project too was last year we received funding to actually not meet in Provo or Los Angeles, but instead go to Jerusalem. And we all went to Jerusalem together for a week, and it was incredible. For us to learn together and to see some holy sites and meet with leading academics in Israel and see different facets of Israeli society. And we had a very meaningful also memorial service at Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum, where our group as Latter-day Saints and Jews laid a wreath at the at the museum and conducted a ceremony memorial there. With this book, though, that's coming out, what's very exciting about it as well is that it's a joint publication of the CCAR Press, that's the Central Conference of American Rabbis, which I'm a member of, and that's the body, basically, of Reform rabbis nationally, So the CCAR Press and also BYU Press. And to our knowledge, there's never been any book ever that's been jointly published between Jews and Latter-day Saints through a Jewish publication company and a Latter-day Saints publication company.
You mentioned BYU. Have you heard about religion professors hosting seders for their students? Some have seen this practice as kind of a religious appropriation. I just wonder what you think.
Yeah, it's a very touchy subject for me, very complicated subject because I have many feelings on it. On one hand, there are certain groups in, I mean, the idea of Passover is looking at a time when we were in bondage and how we achieved our freedom from that. And, you know, I think that certain groups in our country, like African Americans, have experienced something similar with the liberation from a bondage from slavery and Underground Railroad and using different methods to free themselves of that slavery. And at the same time, Latter-day Saints as well have a narrative of leaving a place of persecution and journeying through the wilderness to find their Zion, their place of freedom. As I mentioned, we have shared narrative in this way. So I understand in that regard. Where it does make me a little uncomfortable is, I see this as a Jewish holiday, and I wonder if is this being done to promote, is this being done to understand more about Judaism and Jewish practices, or is this a fun, trendy thing that people are doing? Like, similarly, I see at non-Jewish weddings now people stomping on a glass, and they don't necessarily know the cultural implications and the historical narrative and the pain that that's supposed to represent, but it seems like fun to break a glass. And so with Passover, are these people then keeping strictly kosher for Passover for a week, and are they adhering to the strict religious observances that come with that holiday, or is this a trendy way to have a fun dinner together? And that, I think that's a question participants need to ask themselves. What some Christians have told me is, we love to have Passover seders because because Jesus's Last Supper was a Passover seder. And that always kind of makes my skin crawl a little bit because I go, well, that's not what this is about. And you're taking our holiday and our tradition and something that's incredibly important to us, and you're making it about you. And that makes me kind of uncomfortable. So that's a long-winded answer to your question. Does it make me uncomfortable to a degree? But I think that there's ways you can observe this holiday and acknowledge it as a Jewish story that we can learn from about and ask ourselves who within our society do we need to free? Who is still in their metaphorical Egypt? And if you're doing that, it's different, I suppose, than trying to make it a fun, trendy thing or saying, oh, this was connected to our Christian faith because of these various reasons.
What about like a joint Seder that might, Latter-day Saints might be invited to a Jewish Seder?
It's always great to invite people to things. I think that's how we learn. But it is very, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints have been so gracious in inviting me every single year to their Christmas celebrations. And I go to them. And I'm also aware when I'm at those that I'm a guest for their traditional. This is their religion. This is their tradition. And I'm here as a guest. And this isn't a time for me to take this holiday and try and connect it necessarily to my own faith, but rather this is a time for me to be there as a friend to celebrate something that's meaningful for them as a guest.
A question about your congregants, whom I'm sure you're really getting to know. How many are there, first of all? How many households, again, are kind of?
Oh, yeah, we count by family memberships. So a family can be one person to eight people, who knows? But we have approximately 400 families. We've we're one of the fastest growing synagogues in the country. We've grown about 20% in the last 2 years. So it's really exciting. Even right now, we aren't having the tremendous growth we did in the past couple of years, thanks to the pandemic. But you know, our membership is holding pretty steady. So we're still getting some new people. Yeah. So about 400 families.
What do they tell you about living in Utah? There's probably a range, I'm sure.
You get a whole range of opinions. It's interesting. I think for a lot of people in Utah, aside from Jews, but anybody who's not a Latter-day Saint, there's a very much a we aren't Mormon identity. I don't know if this is something you've experienced before, but it's something I've had some difficult conversations with people having. Like, for instance, when I've said, hey, maybe we shouldn't have alcohol at this event, I've gotten incredible pushback. I'm like, why are you freaking out about me saying, can we wait about having alcohol till there's no kids around and it's past 10 a.m.? And the way it comes down to is, but this is part of our identity in this town, of being basically the non-Mormons. And, and there have been times too where, just last week where I was saying, wow, the Latter-day Saints do these things incredibly. These are some things we could emulate. And where I got pushback for that of like, where it sounded like I was hating on my own community, which I'm not. I'm just saying we can learn from other folks too. So I think there was a sensitivity to that. At the same time, what I'm really proud of is I think in the last few years, as we've begun to do more with the church, is there's become less of an attitude of us versus them and more of a friendship, which makes me really, really happy. And more mutual understanding and seeing that these folks are trying to help us, and vice versa, that we help each other out. I think though, one of the things that drew me to Utah, you asked about that earlier, when I was in Los Angeles, there's about 700,000 Jewish people who live in the greater Los Angeles area. And here, with us being such a minority, I feel here a much stronger sense of community. And basically, if there's somebody Jewish here, I want to help them out. I want to be there from, even if they're not a member of my synagogue, they're part of my community. And we have this connection. I think that's something neat in Utah for us. And Latter-day Saints have told me some similar things of here in Utah, where everybody is Latter-day Saint in certain counties. It doesn't make you so special to say, I'm a Mormon. And they go, yeah, me too. in a place like Seattle, if you're that one Latter-day Saint kid in the school and then a second one joins, you feel an immediate sort of connection and we need to look out for each other. And I think that's kind of what the Jewish community has here, and it's really special.
So what do you say to critics like one I saw recently on your Facebook page who say that you as a Jewish leader shouldn't have anything to do with the LDS Church, which that person said was racist and homophobic? What's your answer to those critics?
I think, I had to pick one text to guide me through my rabbinate. When we were being ordained, we were all asked to, my classmates and I, to pick one text that we would use to guide us through our careers as rabbis. And the one I picked was from a Jewish book that's about 2,000 years old, called Pirkei Avot, and it asks the question, who is wise? And the answer is the one who learns from everyone. And for us to be in Utah and for and to say, oh, we aren't going to interact with 70% of the state's population. I mean, that does us such a major disservice. And I think the beauty, and we see this in the dialogue group as well, is what I appreciate so much about this dialogue is we can be honest with each other. We can talk about what it is about the other's faith that offends us. And sometimes what comes out of that is, I'm actually offended by my own faith in these ways too. And we don't take that personally. We're looking at them through purely sort of academic lens. And I've never had a interfaith dialogue like that before. Other interfaith dialogues I've been part of, it's like, oh, let's tiptoe around the sensitive issues and focus on what we have in common. I think that in the past few years, actually, we've had a tremendous, I think we've influenced the church greatly, and I think they've influenced us greatly. We see things such as their dedication to volunteerism, their sense of community, their devotion to charity. And I go, gosh, we could learn from that. That's amazing. And at the same time, I've had conversations with church leaders about issues like the hate crimes bill. And yes, it includes LGBTQ people in it. But even if we don't see eye to eye on homosexuality, can we agree that people shouldn't get beaten up for being gay? Well, of course we agree on that. Well, great, that's what this hate crimes bill is talking about. Oh, and coming along and supporting it then. And so when we work together, despite our differences, I think that it's something that benefits us both, and we get to learn from each other and move forward together. If we only interact with people that we agree with 100%, then we're really putting ourselves in a very small bubble. What I told that person, who doesn't live in Utah, probably doesn't know very many Latter-day Saints, I know who you're referring to, is that when you look at the history of the Reform movement of Judaism, which is like super progressive movement, there was racism in our past. There was homophobia until, recently, and maybe there still is some, but there was inequality in the way that we treated LGBTQ people until about 20 years ago. And so we've grown and learned, and we're still growing and learning. We're uncovering things within our own movement on sexism now, which is disturbing, that we need to learn from and grow from. And we need to help others grow instead of saying, you're not where we're at, so therefore we can't come together.
And so what do you think, you mentioned a joint trip to Israel. What do you think about Mormons' attachment to Israel?
It's interesting, I'll tell you that. It's one of my first interactions with was before I moved here. I was in Washington, D.C., and I met with a prominent Utah politician, and he and I were meeting for the first time, and this politician told me, Rabbi, I'm an Ephraimite. And I said, I'm sorry, what? And he said, I'm from the tribe of Ephraim. And I said, I thought you guys got wiped out in 720 BCE by the Assyrians. And he goes, well, that's a common misconception. Some of us were able to get on a boat and come to America. And I was like, wait, what? And I didn't know any of this. And so it was kind of blew my mind to hear this new perspective. And so I actually think it's kind of neat, this connection, to be honest, that you can, I mean, I'm somebody who says that Israel is a home to, Jews, Muslims, Christians, Latter-day Saints, to have that connection. And what I love about, one of the things I love about being here in Utah, I often debated, do I want to be a rabbi in America or do I want to move to Israel permanently? And I feel like I get the best of both worlds here. You have Mount Nebo, you have a Jordan River, you have America's Dead Sea.
A Salt Lake, yeah.
Yeah, and this place is literally called Zion. And there's a a reason for all the, we have Moab here. There's a reason for all the overlap. This was seen as the Latter-day Saint Zion. And so I actually think it's really neat. I remember on my first month here, one of my bar mitzvah students was telling me about his project to clean up the litter and pollution in the Jordan River. And I was like, wow, this kid has such a connection to Israel. And then I didn't realize he meant like 20 minutes south of
So I was going to ask you that, Rabbi. Who mentions Zion more, Mormons or Jewish adherents?
which Zion, I guess.
and how would a Jewish person talk about Zion? What do they mean when they say Zion?
We all say Zion too often these days. Like in Zion means so there's Zionism, which is the belief. There's a lot of misconceptions about what Zionism is, I've discovered in my life. I'm a proud Zionist. And what Zionism means in its most watered-down, pure definition is somebody who believes that the Jewish people have a right to their own state, their historical homeland, and self-determination. And so it doesn't really mean anything about Israel's current policies. It doesn't mean you're anti-Palestinian. It doesn't mean, many of those things. So we have a lot of those discussions in our liturgy. We sometimes talk about Zion, and that's generally referring to Jerusalem when we talk about Zion, mm-hmm. and the returning to Jerusalem.
And that's a little different than Mormon's view of Zion.
I don't know, I guess, what the Mormon view of Zion is.
So do you expect to live in Utah a long time?
I hope so. As a rabbi, they always tell you to, when you move to a place, if you're happy there, then don't unpack your last box, because as soon as you do, you lose your job. But I've kept a couple boxes still packed up because I'm hoping to stay here. The congregation recently agreed to give me a 5-year extension of my contract. I know I'm here for the next 6 years minimum, but people asked me when I moved here, because a lot of people use places in kind of, if I do say, like middle America, places like Oklahoma or wherever as stepping stones to go be a rabbi in New York or Los Angeles or Chicago. And I got the experience of being a rabbi in Los Angeles, and I got job offers at major, major synagogues in huge cities across the country. And I turned them down to come here because this is a place I said I could see being my home, where I'd be happy. And so I tell everybody that when they ask me if I'm using this as a stepping stone, I say, yeah, I'm using this as a stepping stone to become Rabbi Emeritus. So that's my aspired gig, is to be the Rabbi Emeritus of Kolami someday. I really love Utah. It's a great place to call my home.
Yeah. Well, Rabbi Sam Spector, we hope you're here for a long time, okay?
From your lips to my board's ears.
And thanks for joining us today, and stay safe, okay?
Hey, thank you. You as well. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, and thanks to Peggy Fletcher Stack.
Always a pleasure.
And to our producer, Chris Samuels. We remind our listeners that they can keep up on all the happenings in and about the church by subscribing to our free weekly newsletter. Just go to sltrib.com to sign up, and we'll talk again next time on Mormon Land.